Greg Riley here with you on Bucco Talk. And as we do at this time each Saturday morning, we go out to the lines to bring in our Pirates insider here at The Fan. And Jason, how many emails, tweets, any form of communication you get from your readers have to do with them complaining that the Pirates are going to go cheap in the draft this year with all the talk about it this week?
Well, a lot more thanks to Pony, which I was, you know, chewing him out about, but that's fine. I get it. The only thing that, you know, and I get it a decent amount. I don't know how to, you know, actually quantify that, but they're not going cheap. They're not going cheap. You can criticize the strategy. You can say the strategy is dumb. I thought Mueller put it pretty well when I was on with those guys yesterday, where he said, you know, would you rather have 2 7s or, like, you know, 1 9 or what? Like, I don't know what the numerical equivalent would be. I mean, that's what they're choosing to do. You can disagree with it, but it is not going cheap.
I brought this up in the last segment, that the Pirates have the most money to spend. It's like almost $14.5 million. And it sounds like Ben Cherington has said, or feels like they're going to spend just about every penny of that. And if that's the case, then I look back in 2012, the Astros used this strategy and landed Carlos Correa and Lance McCullers Jr. Like, that's, I think, the benefit to this. Everybody complains when you talk about Pirates prospects. Oh, how many of those guys are actually going to make it here? Well, if that's how you really feel, then why not have the Pirates acquire as much talent as possible while also still getting a very good player potentially at number one overall? Because I think that's what people are losing out on the fact of here. They're not taking some bum at number one overall. They're just taking a guy that they think fits this idea of being able to maybe save them a little bit so they can get somebody even better with maybe the next two picks.
Yes, I agree with you, Craig. And I'm actually working on a story about this topic. And I talked to Ben Cherington about it the other day. And like, I've just been bogged down with other stories and haven't gotten to it. But, like, yes, that's the point. And one of the things Ben brought up to me is, In a normal year, or even last year, like, you've Spencer Torkelson completely separated himself from everybody else. He was a slam dunk pick. This year, that hasn't happened. And I know a lot of people are, like, all on the Jack Leiter train because they can see him pitch in the College World Series. If you talk to baseball people who project these things and who watch high school players at showcases and scout and make a living projecting players, like, they will tell you that the high school guys might be even better. So what are you left to do if you're Ben Cherington? I mean, they do their own evaluations, and they put a lot of stock into it. One of the things Ben said to me, and I'll be writing this, is that they have a group of about 7 or 8 guys at the top of the draft that they all feel somewhat similar about. So if you have that, and Ben even said this, he said, you know, sometimes you need to be a little bit humble. You need to be humble that maybe you don't have it right and try to make with the best decision to get the most talent. And that's exactly what you're saying, where the Pirates need to get volume. And if that means, I'm just making up a name, but like signing Marcelo Meyer, get a little bit under slot, save that money, throw it at your comp round pick, and you've got two really good players, I can't poke holes in that strategy. I can't. I mean, if they left draft pool money out there and didn't spend it, sure, rip them. They're not going to do that.
And here's the thing I would caution for the people that, and it may just be the people we see on Twitter, like the emails you probably get as well, that complain about it being the Pirates are cheap because they won't take Jack Leiter. These are probably the same people that were screaming last year that they were tanking for Kumar Rocker. And now I haven't seen a single person say Kumar Rocker should be the number one overall pick this year. So to your point, just because you see a guy because they're pitching at the college level and you're impressed by them does not mean they're the number one overall pick. And I think that's what people are falling in love with a little too much right now.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. And if you think about this thing too, man, like it's just gone, from one to the other. It's like trick or treating or something. I mean, my goodness, it started with Rocker. He was supposed to be the pick. Then it goes to Leiter. He's supposed to be the pick. We're having a flirtation with Henry Davis right now. Like, Jordan Lawler has been the pick. Marcelo Meyer has been the pick. There's a couple weeks left. Why don't we just make Brady House the pick? You know, why don't we make Khalil Watson the pick? Like, come on. You know, and I don't understand that sort of dalliance or whatever, but, you know, I mean, when it comes down to it, it's circumstantial. You need to talk to these guys. You need to figure out what the ask is. If you can save a little bit on the slot situation, great. And another thing that I think people probably aren't considering enough too, and again, I don't expect people who have like real jobs and don't have to like fawn over this stuff like you and I to, you know, always think of this, but like, you know, Jack Leiter doesn't really have to go pro right now, does he?
Yep.
Like, what's the worst situation? You hang out at Vanderbilt for another year? You don't need the money. Your dad's doing just fine. Pitch for a great team in a great city. I'm like, man, I don't – if you're not going to make my ask, I'm just going to go back. And so, you know, why should the Pirates get in a bidding war with that? That doesn't make sense for them. So I'm fine with the strategy. I think people are going to be mad because they don't totally understand it, but they're mad about the Pirates anyway. What are you going to do?
Our Pirates insider here at the Fan Post-Gazette, Pirates beat writer Jason Mackey joining us. And Jason, full credit to you. You broke some news on the Pirates this morning.
Yes.
You want to share that Miller. With everybody? Tell us a little bit about Shelby Miller, maybe.
You got it. I don't know whether you were going to tee that up more, but no. So they're bringing in Shelby Miller on a minor league deal. Going to go to Indianapolis. Got to complete some COVID protocols. It's an interesting sign to me. He's 30 years old. He came up through the Cardinals system, was a first-round pick, was really good for the Cardinals. You know, through about, I don't know, 2014, something like that. He's been an all-star, has pitched well. His career the past couple of years has not been very good. Was with the Cubs earlier this season, got DFA'd, had a lower back strain, I believe. But, you know, has been with the Brewers, was an all-star. I think it was in Atlanta. He was an all-star,
yep.
Spent time in the Diamondbacks. So, I mean, he's bounced all around. He's bounced all around, and this is, you know, a younger version of Stephen Wright, basically, and somebody who doesn't throw a knuckleball. Like, he's trying to get his career back on track. The Pirates have an opportunity to let him do that. They have a need for pitching. They have a need for guys to sort of discover themselves and become something. I think it's a smart move. I'll be curious to see what happens. Everything I understand about Mr. Miller is the character is very good. He should sit in well down there, and I'll be excited to watch him pitch.
Well, you mentioned Stephen Wright there as well, and I was reading your three up from your piece this week off the bat. Sometimes in development, a change-up helps, so everybody should go read that. I think it's great every week. But you mentioned in that piece as part of your three up, Stephen Wright, the knuckleballer, and Derek Shelton maybe alluding to the fact that we could see some spot starts coming up. How do you think that will work out? Because I think that I actually made the case last week. I thought they should have started thinking about a six-man rotation if Shelton was so concerned about guys' inning limits and pulling them as quickly as he has. Do you think we'll see some guys come up and go right back down like we saw with Cody Ponce and Yajure? Or could a guy maybe prove himself and stay up here for a little bit?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know, and I think that's going to depend on how he pitches. You know, I think somebody like Stephen Wright, if he comes up here and pitches well, he'll get more run. You know, I think they'd probably let the performance dictate what happens. Or if you have somebody with options, I believe Ponce does off the top of my head, but like, let's just assume he does have mm-hmm. options. You know, if he comes up here and gets whacked around, he's probably going to go back down. So I just think there's different things, but I do think you're going to see them get a little creative here, try to get some guys some rest. And, I mean, let's be honest about where they are. I mean, they've played, you know, pretty good baseball over the past week, which is great. But, you know, they're in a position to audition guys for opportunity. They're not in a pennant race. And, you know, they don't need to say that. But when you have a 21-game stretch or a stretch of 21 in a row, like, what the heck? Bring some guys up here and let's see what they can do.
Jason, I was joking with Jeff Hathorn earlier when he was on with me about Adam Frazier and how shocked I was he was still with the Pirates after the White Sox series. I couldn't believe that they left town and didn't trade for him after seeing what he could do and having the need at second base. And Jeff said that he's hearing the Pirates, the reason that Frazier is maybe still on the Pirates and not traded as of right now is because the asking price for Frazier is high. Is that what you're hearing?
Yeah, I mean, that's no secret. That's what they should be doing. That's what they are doing. You know, I mean, they know they have something here. And good on Ben Charrington. They're holding out because they don't have to make a deal whatsoever at all right now. You know, conceivably, they don't really have to make a deal at all, period, this season. I mean, he's under team control, contractual control for next season. They can just pay his arb number and keep him. And, I mean, I don't think they want to do that because I think the years of control matter. And, you know, he's having a really good year, so you don't want to lose that. But you also want to balance, like, we're not going to make a stupid deal here. We're not going to lower our price. And you see this all the time. And, like, I saw this when I was covering the Penguins. It's just like it's this weird game of chicken where teams that have assets want an astronomical amount for them. Teams that are looking to trade for players or trying to, like,
you know, get by on the cheap, thinking, well, you know, maybe they'll go on sale later. We don't really need to spend right now. We're okay. We have this kid in the minors, you know. So, I mean, that's what you're seeing right now. And you know, people like Ben Cherington, smartly, are not going to let players get away for nothing.
Pirates insider Jason Mackey joining me here on Bucco Talk. And, Jason, I'm going back to that piece you wrote earlier, the off-the-bat piece. You mentioned Mitch Keller in it, and worrying about the workload, the lack of a workload, I think, is probably the way to put it down at AAA. He's thrown, I think it's now 10 and a third innings in this past month after his start yesterday. And I'm starting to read into it like the Pirates are in absolutely no hurry to get Mitch Keller back here, because if they're not stretching him out to any extent, as you made the point here, it's going to not just take him getting right down there, it's going to take him rebuilding his arm to handle the workload at the major league level. Is that how you're reading this situation right now?
Yes. And okay. And as I wrote, I'm slightly worried about it, because if you look at the season, you know, when's he going to come back and pitch? Like, how soon is he going to get built back up? How much time and opportunity is he going to get? Now, I'm not trying to be, you know, Mr. Doomsday here. I mean, like, if he gets it right, they'll build him back out. He'll pitch. He'll get some opportunities. That's fine. We're not at that point. But, like, you know, he throws 40 pitches last night, I think it was, across three innings. You know, as you said, he's thrown 10 and a third in June. I mean, that's not something where you just snap your fingers and say, okay, Mitch, now we're going 6 and 100. Like, that's just not how the body works. Like, he's going to have to build back up to that. And we also, I would argue, haven't really seen meaningful progress. Like, he came out in his first start, or his first inning, I should say, was great. Was wild in his second one. I think last night was probably a little bit of a mix of both. Like, I mean, I'm not watching him pitch every day, but I would have to imagine that the progress isn't quite what they would want to see before bringing him up. So we're going to keep doing this. You know, in the off-the-bat piece, which I do hope people read, talking to Ben about the Clay Buchholz situation that he encountered in Boston, where they sent Buchholz down. And, you know, he ended up getting better coming back, and I think he was better for it. And talking about that idea of sort of pausing and going backwards, they're doing it with Tucker, with Malone. You know, but one of the things that Ben talked about in there that I found interesting was guys sort of banging their head against the wall in a season and realizing, man, like, holy crap, you look up in September, we didn't really accomplish anything. We're just like grinding and, you know, we're back at square one next year. And take that mentality, apply it to Keller, and I worry about, you know, just doing this. Are we going to spend the whole year sort of monkeying around with this guy at AAA, and then we get up and 2022 comes around and they didn't really get anything meaningful out of this season? We're not there. Again, I'm just a little worried that's what could happen.
All right, Jason, last thing for you. Another piece you wrote this week, really, really good one on Quinn Priester. You came away very impressed with the top pitching prospect for the Pirates, didn't you?
Yes, I really did, Craig. I like this kid a lot. I think Pittsburgh is really going to like him. You know, I used in the off-the-bat piece an analogy, and you and I joked about this, that he sounds like Gerrit Cole, carries himself like Jameson Taillon and Joe Musgrove. Like, he is just, he's somebody that is going to be very good for this city. But obviously you don't get there if you stink, and I don't think he's going to stink. And I don't think he's going to stink because of what I'm hearing and what I'm learning about him and the process. And, you know, this story actually started with Kieran Madison, the Greensboro manager, talking to him a couple weeks ago for a story about his pitching staff. And, you know, he's talking about Priester, how much he loves sort of the process and learning and getting better. And so I got a little nerdy with Quinn, talking about what he does, what he's trying to do, what he's trying to fix. The self-awareness for a 20-year-old is staggering. You know, he just, the way he's thinking about things, the way he's thinking about, you know, I'm good pitching with runners on base. I'm happy with that, but I'm not happy with my two-strike execution. Like, I'm throwing pitches that, you know, I'm overspinning my curveball, and I'm trying to be a little bit too fine. I need to remember that if I can put a hitter in a defensive spot, like, how many pitchers on the Pirates' current team, Craig, do we hear stuff like that come out of their mouth?
Yep.
You know, he is very intelligent and, you know, didn't go to college, doesn't matter. You know, just very smart, very cerebral about what he's doing, and I like that. I think it's going to translate.
Jason, thank you as always for the time. I appreciate it.
You got it, my friend. Take care, Craig.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.